Our next case for argument is N8 Medical v. Colgate-Palmolive. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rick Thomas, and I am here from sunny Phoenix. Glad that I brought the warm weather with me this morning.
Good. Thank you.
I'm pleased to be here this morning.
Don't you go about lording it over us.
Well, I suppose for a lot of folks in Denver, maybe even 40 degrees is warm, but for Phoenix, that's the dead of winter. I'm pleased to be here this morning on behalf of N8 Pharmaceuticals, Inc. N8 Pharmaceuticals, I've grown to refer to N8 Pharmaceuticals as Pharma in the case, and so I'll continue that reference in my argument. I would like to reserve a few minutes of time at the end.
Just watch your own clock.
I will proceed from there. This case arises from the efforts of various parties to commercialize a family of molecules called serogenins. The serogenins were discovered by Dr. Paul Savage at Brigham Young University in the late 90s. And Pharma has an exclusive license from BYU to commercialize serogenins in various fields of application. They received that license on August 3rd, 2012. The license included a license of trade secrets related to the serogenin IP, intellectual property, within the field of application that Pharma was granted. 10 months later, on July 25, 2013, Colgate-Palmolive allowed a PCT application to publish, disclosing and destroying those trade secrets that had been exclusively licensed to Pharma and others in their fields of application. However, it wasn't merely the destruction and the disclosure of the trade secrets that caused damage to Pharma. When it published on July 25th, 2013, the PCT immediately created prior art that, according to Pharma's experts in the record below, prevented commercially valuable patent protection in three primary areas. Number one, anti-inflammation. Number two, malodor. And number three, wound care. And this cut across Pharma's field of application and prevented Pharma from having or promising exclusivity in the future within these fields of application to sublicensees. In other words, it damaged Pharma's license. As a result, when the PC published, Pharma lost the ability to license or otherwise commercialize 8 distinct fields of application: toothpaste, breath fresheners, antibacterial gel, oral paste, oral health lozenges, wound care, rheumatoid arthritis, skin care, and oral mucositis. When the district court below granted Colgate's motion for summary judgment, the district court left Pharma with no remedy for this harm. I would like to touch briefly in my time this morning in two general areas. First, I would like to mention Utah law.
On a chronological basis, when did Pharma acquire its rights? What day?
August 3rd, 2012.
And what day did Colgate acquire whatever rights it had?
Colgate first entered into agreements with Serogenics back, I believe it was 2006, 2007, sometime in that time frame, Your Honor. It was much earlier than that when they entered into agreements with Serogenics and began doing research into the...
And what are the days during which Colgate engaged in the behavior that you assert is a infringement of your rights?
Colgate's behavior that infringed on our rights, Your Honor, would only occur, we would agree, after we got our rights. I think they engaged in
contract. You got your rights in 2012.
Correct.
So your complaint, then, about Colgate's behavior is necessarily, under that statement, have to have occurred sometime after 2000, after the what was the date in 2012?
August 3rd, 2012.
Sometime after August 3rd, 2012.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think...
Now, let me explain one concern I had about reading your brief. That it seemed to me that a lot of the behavior, and I'm using the word there in neutral fashion. I'm not using it to... probably the word conduct is better. The conduct that you complain about seems to me that is conduct that occurred prior to August 3, 2012.
Much of it was, Your Honor. Much of the wrongdoing.
And therefore, it seems to me that you had to have proceeded on some kind of a really novel theory of third-party beneficiary theory that you would have been an anticipatory third party. I don't understand your theory. So before you get to the detail, could you walk me through the legal theory under which you assert rights for these conduct that
Certainly,
occurred
Your Honor.
Long before you came on the scene?
Certainly. We brought two claims against Colgate. One for trade secret misappropriation.
To use Scottsdale language that occurred quite a while before you rode your horse up to the saloon?
No, Your Honor, I try not to do that. The second claim we brought is for unfair competition. The trade secret claim is based upon the conduct that occurred, the event that occurred, on July 25th, 2013.
And that was by the World Intellectual Property Organization, not Colgate.
That was a publication through the World Property.
Right.
Correct.
So, in other words, after August, this is really my question, after August 3rd, 2012, was there any affirmative act that was committed by Colgate that underlies your misappropriation claim?
Well, Your Honor, it's a valid question, but it depends on how you define affirmative act. By doing nothing, Colgate allowed this PCT to publish.
And that's your answer is your theory is predicated on that you can misappropriate trade secrets through inaction. And if you lose on that as a matter of law, when you earlier answered Judge Lucero, you said much of it was before August 3rd, 2012. In fact, there was nothing except inaction after August 3rd, 2012, right?
In terms of the trade secret claim,
right.
Your Honor. That's a much different question, though, for the unfair competition claim. The trade secret claim is based upon the concept that, and again, touching on Utah law, that Utah adheres to the property view of trade secrets.
Right, and therefore, if you were representing BYU raising these arguments, I would say you may have a claim here. Or if you were representing the inventor, perhaps you have a claim here. But you're representing somebody, as we've established, had no rights during the period of these infringements, claimed infringements, were occurring.
Your Honor, I would take one exception to what Your Honor just described.
And I'm glad you do, because that's the purpose of oral arguments. Not to make speeches, but...
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I'm happy to answer questions. The publication of the PCT was a disclosure of a trade secret. Nothing up till that point is deemed a disclosure. You file a patent application, it's confidential by the WIPO rules. You can withdraw that at any time. Colgate gets notice of this publication sometime in May of 2013. They do nothing. Despite the fact they know it's there, despite the fact they have hidden it from BYU and N8 Medical, and in fact all of the licensees, they have hidden that fact from BYU and its licensees. The disclosure, and I can't emphasize this enough, is a separate and distinct act of misappropriation, a separate wrongdoing. It is, in fact, the act that caused the damage, not just to us, but to our former co-plaintiffs, N8 Medical and BYU.
But they're not here.
They're not here. They've settled out of the case. We got dismissed. They settled. But the act of a disclosure is a specific defined act of misappropriation.
Well, that's true in a lot of scenarios. Let's say I work for, let's say you have the ABC Corporation, and I'm your chief executive, and I steal your trade secret. I've misappropriated a trade secret. That is an act. And then I give it to a friend of mine. That's a separate act of publication. And so we have a lot of cases that you point out that those are two separate acts. Those are two separate acts that could trigger liability for misappropriation of a trade secret. The anomaly here is, where does the law meet the reality of these intellectual, these international patents? Because here, the only act is committed by a third party, the World Intellectual Property Organization. There's no affirmative act by Colgate. And so that's the struggle, is theoretically, sure, an act of publication could be a discrete act. But here, the act was not committed by the defendant.
Your Honor, I think, technically speaking, you're correct. Colgate wasn't there to push the button and say, publish. Colgate, though, got notice it was going to be published. Colgate, in meeting with BYU and at least N8 Medical in December of 2012, was aware that this was going to publish. So the knowledge of the publication was there. The knowledge of their prior wrongdoing is there. So that is a very significant difference, I think, rather than just saying that a third party did this. Colgate, under the regulations governing WIPO, had every right to withdraw that. They could have withdrawn that. Had they said at any time, oh, by the way, we filed this patent application, it would have been looked at, considered, and possibly withdrawn. Something could have been done. But they didn't. Nobody knew about this until after the publication. If I could, let me, unless there's another question on that front,
So they had a duty to disclose to you, even though at that point you weren't even a part of this transaction?
They didn't disclose it to BYU, Your Honor. They didn't disclose it to N8 Medical. N8 Medical.
So basically, we're back to third-party beneficiary. I mean, you're assuming the rights of BYU?
No, Your Honor. But Colgate was certainly aware that BYU not only had one licensee, but as a result of the December 2012 meeting, was aware that there was another licensee for toothpaste not in the room. So when they left that meeting in December 2012, knowing they had not told these folks about the patent application pending or about the prior improper testing, they knew that there was another licensee somewhere out there on toothpaste, which was in fact us.
Well, is there really evidence that there was knowledge that there was another licensee for toothpaste, or was there knowledge that there was another licensee that had obtained an interest in commercial applications of Sarah Jennings?
No, Your Honor, it's specific to toothpaste. And if the court will look in the record at the testimony of Carl Ginberg that we cited in our statement of the case, he has testified that he was aware and disclosed to them that the licensee for toothpaste was another company.
You have the one-minute bell. Ding.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me speak briefly about the trade secret.
Said you wanted to reserve time.
So I'm going to go ahead and give it to you right here. Unfair competition is a much different animal. Unfair competition under either New Jersey law or New York law, either one, is the same. It's a very amorphous concept. What we need is someone who has taken some kind of action for pecuniary benefit of their own, was dishonest, bad faith, that caused damage to someone's rights. And our contention is, I think the evidence is there, we've described it in our papers, that Colgate knew enough to know that they were harming not only BYU, but its licensees, and that licensees included Pharma.
And if you fail on your first claim, does your second claim go away?
No, Your Honor. Colgate is made.
They're not tied. They're independent.
They are independent and separate. Okay. What we need is independently wrongful conduct. Okay. It could be something, and it is something. It's fraud, other conduct other than trade secret.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Ken Black. I'm joined by my colleague, Dave Mortensen, and we represent Colgate-Palmolive Company. The District Court in this case properly granted summary judgment to Colgate on straightforward, undisputed facts. We submit that the District Court's orders and judgments should be affirmed. The Court granted summary judgment to Colgate and against N8 Pharma for the simple reason that N8 Pharma is and always has been, on the facts of this case, a latecomer. It came in after the fact that gave rise to the events in this case. N8 Pharma had no contract with Colgate, no relationship with Colgate, no interaction with Colgate, literally none. And so it comes as a latecomer asking for relief nonetheless. I'll be clear as I begin. I'll talk some about things like misappropriation and unfair competition. Colgate vigorously disputes that it did anything wrong. There was no finding of misappropriation, no finding of unfair competition in the lower court. And in fact, there was a settlement before any such finding was made. But today, the question really is one of timing. N8 Pharma sought to intervene in this case in the district court a full 8 months after the case had been commenced by the original plaintiff, N8 Medical. And it could never overcome the simple facts that were really evidenced, I think, by Judge Lucero's question. The timing is this. In December of 2011, Colgate used testing it had conducted all on its own, in its own research laboratories, put that testing into a patent application, and filed what the parties have come to call the PCT, or PCT patent application. That was December 21, 2011. It is not, as we've heard from Mr. Thomas, until August 3, 2012, that N8 Pharma first obtains a license right from Brigham Young University. That's the simple fact of the matter. And then, Judge Bachrach, as your question suggested, in July of 2013, the World Intellectual Property Organization, or WIPO, published the patent application. That, for sure, is after N8 Pharma has its license interest. But if there was any misappropriation at all, and of course we dispute it, if there was, it began in December of 2011. That was the fundamental finding of the district court. And because that misappropriation began, if it began at all, in December of 2011, that means that Pharma had no interest at the time of misappropriation.
What rights did Pharma then get from BYU? If you could do all this research, then they get something from BYU, and then you publish your research, did they just get nothing when they entered into their agreement with BYU?
No, they absolutely received a license to the Sarah Jennings technology in particular fields of use. And today, as I understand it, they have that license. But when they received the license, the act of filing the patent application, the research done by Colgate, had already been completed. And so what they received was some interest in technology that, at least according to them, had been impaired in some way. It was interesting because Judge Jenkins down below focused on that fact and said in passing several times to the parties, and in particular to Pharma, have you visited with BYU? Have you consulted with BYU? Suggesting that if there's a remedy at all that Pharma may have here, the remedy lies with the licensor. After all, it's the one that gave whatever it gave on August 3rd of 2012. There are, We don't need to, in this case, take the district court's word for it, certainly not my word for whether the misappropriation, if any at all, began in December of 2011. Pharma alleged it, and it alleged it specifically. For example, in its complaint, when it first came into the case, in paragraph 16, it alleged specifically that the filing of the patent application, not its publication, but the filing, constituted misappropriation. It made the same response when it answered interrogatories in the litigation.
Was there any assertion that the filing was made in bad faith? Not whether it was misappropriation, but that they just did it for ulterior motives?
I think Pharma's better able to answer that question, but it's certainly true that they contend the filing was a breach of contract and a misappropriation of trade secrets. I don't know that I've ever heard it suggested that the filing was by itself some bad act other than the contract, other than the misappropriation. But they obviously take issue.
At the time that the patent application was filed, it became public information, correct?
When it was filed, it was public in the sense that it was with a public entity, yeah. WIPO. It hadn't yet been disseminated
Do you file an application for patent application with a private organization rather than with the U.S. Patent Office?
It's in this particular case, it's an international patent application, and so it's filed with the World Intellectual Property Organization.
Which is a government organization?
Absolutely.
Of what government?
It's a combination of governments. The Patent Cooperation Treaty, sometimes called the PCT, establishes the organization, and the countries that subscribe to the Patent Cooperation Treaty constitute the World Intellectual Property Office.
But to be clear, is the filing publication?
The filing?
I thought the publication came later.
Yes, the public. So the way it works is you file the application with this patent office.
Right.
It rests in the patent office. And in this case, and in virtually all cases, patent applications sit for 18 months or so until they are then published in the sense that they are available on the web and fully accessible to the public. And so
anyone with a trade secret that could have been infringed upon by a patent application would not know of that infringement until there was the publication.
I believe it's true that if someone thinks that what's in the patent application contains secrets that are theirs and that they don't want out, they would learn, unless told otherwise, when the application publishes. I think that's true.
Yeah.
So, can you do a due diligence search at the, quote, patent office, akin to a UCC search or a title search at the time of Pharma's? I guess let me put what's implicit out there. At the time that Pharma purchased whatever it did from BYU, could it, in the exercise of due diligence, have checked the records of the patent office?
It can always check the records of the patent office. I believe in this particular instance, when this application was filed, it would not have been publicly available if they had tried to perform due diligence.
So the answer to my question is no, they can't do a title search, so to speak, until it's actually published.
That's, yes. I mean, what I'm suggesting is they can search. There were lots of patents on this technology, so they could find the range of patents that were out there on Sterigenics technology. But this particular application, it's true. They would not have found.
Well, I didn't make the point, so you have to say it's true. I mean, it's just suppressed at that point.
It is. It's not fully publicly available until it publishes in July of 2013.
All right. And so the publication is not an act of arbitrariness in any way. This is a time period during which any application would have been released and published.
Yes, I think the rules of the Patent Office provide that an application once filed will be published 18 months thereafter.
Okay.
On your theory about, I want you to address, if you would, your opposing counsel's argument that in this context, the inaction prior to July 2013 would essentially be the equivalent of an act. And let me ask that question against this sort of hypothetical backdrop. If I have an explosive and I give it to a Confederate and, you know, say blow up a building, and they blow up a building, well, when they blow up the building, maybe I'm not perpetrating an act then, but that's it. I had set in a chain of events in motion that would cause that to be an inevitability, which I wonder if that's what essentially happens here. Colgate files this patent application. There's 18 months, as you just explained, in the absence of anything that, to the contrary, it is going to publish. And I wonder if the filing of the patent application, against the backdrop of that will be an automatic publication in 18 months, essentially that inaction in over that year and a half would be the equivalent of an act.
What's wrong with that? In some ways it's semantics, right? Whether we call it an act or an inaction. It's true. The question that Your Honor asked was I think, right in the sense that Colgate did nothing affirmative. But it happened, and it's fair to say that when you file a patent application, you understand that someday it will publish. Here's why I think the answer to that question doesn't really matter, though, on the law and on these facts. When the filing occurs, courts across the country hold that a misappropriation begins. And I was describing Pharma's allegation in this case, their concession, including one in open court with the district court, that the misappropriation began, if at all, when the filing occurred in December of 2011. If we accept that concession as accurate, that tells us all we need to know then about what the law provides. The law provides that any subsequent act of misappropriation may be an act, and if we call it an action, so be it. It doesn't make it a new claim. It's not a new tort. And so the courts have adopted several principles to deal with this situation. One of them comes from the basic premise that you must own or have an interest in the technology at the time the misappropriation occurred. And that's why December 2011 makes all the difference. There are several cases for that proposition, whether we apply Utah or New Jersey law. The second basic legal doctrine that makes all the difference here is the doctrine of continuing misappropriation. What the courts have said when they're dealing with misappropriations that have varying acts, so for example, misappropriation can take the form of acquiring something wrongfully, it can be using it wrongfully, it can be disclosing it wrongfully. And what the courts have said is, when we deal with various acts of misappropriation, that does not mean that we have a separate claim every single time someone commits an act in furtherance of the continuing misappropriation. Rather, what the courts have said is that we can define at a time certain when the misappropriation begins, and then once we do that, we understand that we have a continuing misappropriation. And that's exactly what happened here, and it's exactly what Judge Jenkins concluded was the reason Pharma didn't have a claim. Let me say this about continuing misappropriation, because it's suggested in the reply brief from the appellant that it is a doctrine confined only to the statute of limitations. And I would suggest that's just wrong. We cite cases that deal with the continuing misappropriation doctrine for sure in the statute of limitations context. Courts are trying to decide when a claim accrues and begins, and then when the time runs. But we also cite cases that deal with the applicability of a newly adopted statutory scheme. I'll give you an example. In Missouri, the legislature adopted the Uniform Trade Secrets Act. It was Missouri's version of that act. And in a case called BP Chemicals versus Jiangsu, the court was confronted with this question. Does the act apply to misappropriation that began before the effective date of the act, but continued after the effective date of the act? And the court answered the question this way. It said, no, we don't apply the act to this misappropriation, and the reason is that it began before the effective date of the act, even though it continued after the effective date of the act. It was saying, in effect, there's one claim, even though there are potentially multiple acts of misappropriation. As I conclude, let me deal with the Agilisys case, which is cited for the first time in the reply brief of the appellant. It's urged in that brief that this case runs against the continuing misappropriation point that Colgate makes. I would suggest the opposite is true. It actually supports Colgate's position, and here's why. In that case, a federal court in Georgia was asking itself, does the Defend Trade Secrets Act, the federal act, apply to misappropriation that began before the effective date of the act and continued afterward? And the court said, yes, it applies to both. And you might think, well, that seems like it's at odds with what was done in Missouri. That's not true. And the reason is that Congress statutorily said that misappropriation of any kind, and the actual language of the statute in the Defend Trade Secrets Act is any act is subject to the Defend Trade Secrets Act, whether before or after. I can see my time is up. We urge the Court to affirm the district court.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning.